Coming up on this episode of China Insider with David Zhang.
What happens when terror comes knocking on your door?
This threat from China is not one that is limited to just economics or just the military or just some other aspect of society.
We must hold steadfast to the fundamental values of freedom.
The Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, not just for us as Americans, but for posterity. What they were saying was, these are documents that ought to inspire freedom around the world.
To defend America against communism.
There has never been an adversary that poses a greater threat to the American way of life.
Join me and Dr. Kevin Roberts, president of the Heritage Foundation, to explore the threat from communist China and what must be done to defend against it.
This is the China Insider Podcast. I'm your host, David Zhang.
Dr. Kevin Roberts, thank you so much for joining us here on China Insider.
It's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you.
The threat of China. Mm-hmm. In your view, how do we assess this threat? Is it from one particular vantage point, or is something that we need to consider as a whole of government and whole of America approach?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's a whole of society approach. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, This threat from China is not one that is limited to just economics or just the military or just some other aspect of society. The Chinese Communist Party deserves credit for one thing, and it is building through their totalitarian evil regime a very serious adversarial regime to the United States. In fact, I would say in the entire history of the United States, that there has never been an adversary that poses a greater threat to the American way of life and therefore to freedom in the world than does China. And therefore, I think as the United States is thinking about responses to this threat, which has only gotten worse in the last decade, that we have to understand it's not going to be enough for us, to the heart of your question, simply to increase defense spending. Although that's good, it's not going to be enough merely to increase our rhetoric about defending Taiwan. Although that's good, it's not going to be enough for us to say no more CCP investments in our research and our universities. Although that's good, we have to do all of those things. And the reason I'm smiling while I deliver what is a pretty sober response is because I know as a historian of this country, that Americans are never more unified when they recognize an external threat to our way of life. And I'm just here to tell you, in my nearly half century walking this earth, being a son of the Cold War, being a grandson of people who fought them, the Soviets, I am as concerned, if not more, about the threat that the CCP poses to you and me and to all Americans than I am about the Soviets or was about the Soviets. We have to recognize that. And I'll say that this shouldn't be a left or a right kind of thing. It shouldn't be a Democrat versus Republican thing. This is a challenge to all of us, and it's time for us to wake up.
But do you think every level of the American society recognized that to the same level that now Americans are actually awakening to?
I think a year ago, my response to that question would have been more pessimistic. That is to say that we didn't have nearly enough Americans paying attention to this threat. The good news about where we are in the second quarter of 2022 is that probably the number of Americans who recognize the threat from the CCP has doubled or tripled in that year. Great credit to some members of Congress who really elevated this as a problem. Great credit, for that matter, to governors of all people who are saying, this isn't just a federal policy issue. This is something we're seeing in our states relative to the level of investment that the CCP has made very intentionally, of course, very nefariously in some of our institutions. So I'm optimistic that trend will continue. And I'm trying to do as much as I can. My colleagues at the Heritage Foundation are trying to do everything in our rhetorical power to say, if you're an average American and you're sensing that China is this huge threat to the United States, you're right. There's a plan to fix it. We ought to be concerned, but not scared. We're not alarmists at Heritage, but we're realists. Mm-hmm. And reality says that we've really got to wake up to this threat, as you say.
You recently had Secretary Mike Pompeo on, and you guys had a very candid conversation about all things to do with China. You both talked about the resolve at home, how needs to have, the American people needs to have resolve for things like dealing with China. Unfortunately, China's threat is a one where it's, for one, infiltrating the American society, like the secretary had mentioned. How do you construct resolve in a sense where the enemies are essentially, you know, next door to you, or right. they are attacking you straight on, but also behind your back.
Boy, it's a challenge, isn't it? And you know, I applaud Secretary Pompeo for his clarity of vision. Also his understanding, which of course squares with ours at Heritage, that while we've got some work to do in recognizing this threat and putting together a solution, which I'll get to momentarily, that Americans always rise to the occasion. What makes this particular challenge so troubling, to the heart of your question, is that the CCP has been very good, I have to say, at coming through the side doors and the back doors of American society. In other words, they have done a far better job than the Soviets did in the 60s, 70s, and 80s at using our free and open society against us. I mean, that ought to tell us right away that there's a huge red flag, right? And so the way we address that, first and foremost, is with clear, strong leadership. We don't have that right now. I mean, I say that with the greatest respect to the office of the president, the greatest respect to President Biden. But I'm just letting you know, as I think probably a lot of your viewers understand, this is the weakest, most feckless presidential administration in modern history, maybe in American history overall. There's time for the administration to find its footing relative to China. I'm going to go back and be good on my words, which is that this shouldn't be a left or a right versus thing. I lead the largest conservative think tank in the world. And so I'm here to say that if President Biden can find his footing and be in stating in a really clear-eyed way that we're going to be behind Taiwan, we're going to give them munitions, we're going to do whatever we can to make sure that as China does its saber rattling, that we have their back. We agree with Secretary Pompeo at Heritage. We believe Taiwan should be recognized as a sovereign nation because it is. That's the first step. But the second step is legislatively. We have to have our friends in Congress, and maybe some of our not friends, some people on the other side, recognize that of all of the different public policy challenges facing the United States this year and next, the top of the list, because it is definitive for us in this generation, is how we respond to China. We have to eliminate CCP investments in American universities. We have to eliminate CCP investments in any of our national security interests. We have to tear out root and branch every part of the Chinese Communist Party in this country that begins with leadership, and leadership that doesn't just talk some good talk, but is willing to sustain that through policy implementation.
There's so many ways I want to go, but the first question is...
Me too.
What you just mentioned is a definition of reactive politics or reactive governing. How do we educate people on why that is bad? That is bad when it comes to dealing with an adversary.
A lot of this has to do with rhetoric, and pardon me for being a little pedantic here as a teacher. That when I was coaching speech and debate students at the high school and college level, I would always say, don't, you know, as you're trying to persuade people of something, don't condescend to them that, you know, they're wrongheaded for really noble ideas. And what I mean by that is all of us, almost all of us in the United States have been very noble when it comes to our attitude toward China. And the reason is, as Americans, whether we're left or right, Democrat or Republican, we love other people in the world because we understand that every human being on this planet has imprinted on his or her soul the desire to be free. We love the Chinese culture. We love the Chinese people. This battle is with the Chinese Communist Party, who are also exploiting their people. And so that's it's a kind of long-winded way of saying that we have to recognize for people on the left and people on the right in the United States, we made a really good try at using our free market principles, our principles of freedom, to try to get China to look more like America. And all that's happened is that China has gotten America to look more like China. And by that, I mean just another subsidiary state, which China is doing all across the world. And so it leads me to the second point, which is to say, I believe that a vast majority of Americans, and we know this from our polling data at Heritage, will respond to a very clear, a very prudent, a very measured plan for eliminating CCP influence in this country. To sum up, we have to connect that to the threat that the CCP poses. Present tense, not a year from now, not 10 years from now, present tense as you and I sit here to the freedoms we love. Any American leader, whether they're on the left or the right, who can articulate that in a very clear way, in a very positive way, is going to be resoundingly popular because Americans have always been the last best hope for the world. Here is our chance. in our generation to get it right, just as we have done every other time in our history.
I want to ask you a personal question. Why are you passionate about telling people why this is an issue?
Yeah, it's a great question, isn't it? Because I guess there's nothing about me necessarily that would make that obvious, other than the fact that I labor in gratitude for waking up each day as an American. And I was formed in my working class family in the Gulf Coast, the American South, of knowing that even though we didn't have a lot of material resources, what we did have was something that no one could ever take from us, and that's our freedom. And as I think about, therefore, the work that I do in leading the Heritage Foundation, where all of us there believe that too, that with that inheritance, that cultural inheritance, that inheritance of freedom, also comes an obligation. And by that, I mean a moral obligation, not just to us in the United States, but very much honoring what our founders did in the late 1700s, where they wrote the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, not just for us as Americans, but for posterity. What they were saying was, these are documents that ought to inspire freedom around the world. It's that that every day makes me very optimistic about the American future, especially if we understand that part of the American future is using our influence when we must, as we must with the Chinese Communist Party, to help others in need. It may be helping Ukrainian refugees, but sticking with our topic today, it also means helping the Chinese people who are laboring under the most oppressive state in the world today. I find that very natural. My colleagues at the Heritage Foundation find that very natural. It may seem to many Americans as yet another obligation that America has, but as a historian, I guess I understand that if we don't engage in these great battles about moral clarity, about freedom, then we probably shouldn't even exist as a country ourselves.
My question to you is, what is going to be at stake if the American way fails?
Everything. The world as we know it comes to an end. By that, I don't mean that, you know, we're going to live out the book of Revelation necessarily because America stopped. You know, we're not going to necessarily see natural disasters and plagues and whatnot. What I mean is that America has been, with all of its imperfections, the greatest source of light, of goodness, of freedom in the history of the world. I also say that recognizing that that statement can be understood by some Americans, by people in the world, to be culturally arrogant. I don't mean it that way. I mean it as a historian that our cultural inheritance is a cultural of freedom, is a cultural inheritance that can be shared by anyone, regardless of their native tongue, regardless of the color of their skin, regardless of their religion. That's the promise of the American founding. And therefore, I think that this is, of course, unfortunate that we have this huge challenge from the CCP. But in a lot of ways, you're probably hearing in my response, in this resolve, it's a huge opportunity for America to know more about itself, and to know more about America is to know more about every human being on the planet. If you want peace, if people around the world want peace, then we have to have a strong America that doesn't, you know, sort of needlessly go around the world making intrusions into other countries. But in these once in a generation challenges like the CCP poses, that we're fearless about fighting that, however that fight looks. I hope this is a fight with the CCP that isn't military, doesn't involve the military. It may be more economic. It may be social. I happen to think it's probably a fight that's going to be fought and won because of political courage, something that is in short supply in the United States today.
The Chinese Communist Party has an example of what failure would look like, the Soviet Union. What does America have that would prevent or educate us on here's what's going to happen if we don't do well?
Boy, that's a great question. You know, you pose or get into a little bit of a risk asking a historian that, because I could go on for a few hours about all of the examples of that, but I'll, out of courtesy and time, limit myself to one or two. Yeah, the Chinese communists understand that the Soviet Union failed. You know, Putin's invasion of Ukraine has never gone well from the first moment. It actually underscores the fact that communism is not only bad in the present tense, it's bad in the future tense. The Russians have never recovered, unfortunately, from the how terrible communism is. So the Chinese know that. If America goes south, probably the best example is when Great Britain, from which we received so much of our political inheritance, began to get weaker. That happened to some extent because of some good reasons, that is independence movements in the far-flung British Empire. But there was a generation, this is the point, there was a generation of British thinkers in the early 1900s, British politicians as well, who questioned whether Britain should continue to be one of the world's powers. And one of them rose to be the prime minister of Great Britain. His name was Neville Chamberlain. And all Neville Chamberlain gave to history was appeasement. That's it. His legacy was looking at the reality of what Hitler was doing in Europe. And Hitler wasn't just becoming famous for military tactics like Blitzkrieg. He was using military tactics like Blitzkrieg to end innocent lives. And all Neville Chamberlain did is conclude that he could just appease him. And what we're recognizing across Europe, across the world, and increasingly, thankfully, in the United States, is that appeasement is not the way. And so that flirtation that some British leaders had about 100, 110 years ago with being weaker is probably the greatest lesson in modern history for the United States. I'm sorry to report that there are a lot of American leaders today who share the notion of appeasement. And they're on the left and they're on the right. And by rejecting appeasement, we at Heritage are not saying that we want American ground troops in every country. In fact, we are vehemently opposed to that. We're just saying that when it comes to huge, major existential threats like the Chinese Communist Party, we darn well better be ready for the fight.
China, Russia, we're in an authoritarian camp, by the way, against democracy, against the United States. In that sense, what should be the American solution to prepare for something like that?
Well, I think almost literally today, it begins with the United States making sure it's not caught on its back foot relative to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. That's important intrinsically, that is to say, for the sovereignty of Ukraine. But as I'm sure you understand, it's also important for the Chinese to take note. And by that, I mean, if you're Xi, why in the world, if you consider the American withdrawal from Afghanistan, you consider the back-footed nature of President Biden relative to Ukraine, including telling the Ukrainians that, yes, we will be party to transferring MiG jets that could be definitive tactically in the outcome of the battle, but in fact, a week later, break that promise. Why would you, if you're Xi, if you're considering those two things and the fact that while this is happening, we're negotiating a nuclear deal with Iran and also negotiating buying oil and gas from Venezuela? Why, if you're considering those things, if you're Xi, would you draw any conclusion except that the American state is inept and weak? Therefore, we have to be very good as a people at understanding that meeting this potential union of Russia and China requires the United States more than any other country, hopefully including Great Britain, our greatest ally, to say, if you do this, there will be consequences that go beyond sanctions that are levied too late. And therefore, it leads me to a very specific point. If I or one of my colleagues at the Heritage Foundation were making the decision about this, then what we would say is, if Russia and China want to go down that road, then tomorrow we recognize Taiwan as a sovereign nation. In other words, the only way these totalitarians will understand a path to peace, a path to not working together, a path to ending their violation of people's sovereignty and innocence, is for the United States to stand up and have the courage to say, stop. We did that in the Cold War. It took us a few decades to find our footing. Mm-hmm. It started with this great policy of containment that George Kennan wrote in the early 1950s, and we implemented it. We implemented it under Democrat and Republican administrations. It was extraordinarily unifying for the American people. And I look forward, therefore, to the American political class, which unfortunately is not only invested in the CCP, but pretty doggone conflicted with the CCP, to have some moral clarity that America is a heck of a lot more important to save than the Chinese totalitarians.
From Eisenhower, down to Biden. The Cold War was four or five presidents, and then we decided that the Cold War was done, right? Do you think the Chinese Communist Party ever decided that the Cold War was finished?
Now, that question shows, as I already knew, your wonderful command of history. And the answer is no. You know very well that culturally, what the Chinese communists have at their advantage is a very beautiful cultural tradition that the Chinese as a people should be influential in the world. And the CCP is exploiting that to say that China should be the lone superpower. That's the ultimate objective. And therefore, the leaders of the CCP, Xi in particular, never understood the Cold War to be concluded. What they meant was they first wanted to replace the Soviet Union as the adversary to the United States. China has seen the relationship with the United States to be an adversarial one for three decades at least. We have been slow. You know, I've levied some accusations about the other side. So let me confess that I, along with a lot of conservative friends, were slow to recognize this threat too. I mean, I have such confidence in the American free market and the American way of life. I too thought that we could win over the CCP with free trade, which of course the CCP never allowed. But all that to say, it didn't happen. And therefore, we have to understand that the United States ended the Cold War not merely by saying it. Mm. But it was precipitated by a very specific moment when President Reagan had the political courage, against all of the advice he was getting from the other side and the appeasers in the United Nations, to stare down the Soviets and say, tear down that wall. We need an American president, whomever he or she may be in the future, to find that moment. And I guarantee you that it's that kind of strength, that kind of courage that will achieve peace.
When the Soviet Union fell, one contributing factor of it was the fact that they decided to declassify some of the earlier horrors of the Soviet Union. How do you feel about one possible ways to confront the Chinese Communist Party as to expose them in such a way that would awaken not just the American people, but people around the world?
Gosh, I love that point. I think it's crucial. In fact, that is correct, that was a contributing factor in the last phase of the Soviet Union. We were also certainly grateful to have a leader in Gorbachev who, while not perfect, probably gets a little too much celebration because he still was at least a dictator, at least part of his tenure. He did open some of those things. And for this particular circumstance, I think the United States needs to understand that should be a tactical objective. We have the opportunity to do so, however, if and only if we start at home by recognizing that American corporate CEOs who are, like in the case of Disney, filming movies in Chinese provinces where slave labor exists, and then in the next year decrying really right-minded policy by American governors, also are enemies of the people. Mm-hmm. We need an American president to say that. We want them to continue to be a company. We want them to make a profit, but they need to decide. Do they want to be American or do they want to be CCP? And 100 times out of 100, you and I both know what they will decide. We need the moral clarity and the political courage to say it. And therefore, I think it's going to happen because the American people will not tolerate continued appeasement toward the CCP.
What do you think is the core message to take home when all of this is said and done about, by and large, what we need to know versus what we ought to know when it comes to China, when it comes to the American solution to it?
Well, I appreciate that opportunity, and I will speak directly to you for a minute and say, if you're sitting in this interview and you're saying, oh my gosh, I didn't know all of those things about the Chinese Communist Party, it's okay. Nor did I, nor did all of us at the Heritage Foundation. I'm not wagging my finger at you. What I'm saying is we have a moment in time. It's probably just a couple of years at most to organize and harness our angst about this into public policy. And it starts with here in the United States, ending nefarious practices like CCP investment in national security interests here in the United States, CCP investments in some of our research. And let me just say, there are a lot of lobbyists here in Washington, D.C., who drive fancy cars, live in big houses. They're multimillionaires because they're agents of the Chinese Communist Party. We look forward to bringing that to an end. And you can participate in that by asking your member of Congress, whether he's or she is a Democrat or Republican, to take action. I am really grateful for the opportunity to highlight this. I want to end with you by concluding this way. The Heritage Foundation is involved in a lot of battles. a lot of policy battles. There isn't an issue we don't work on. This, the Chinese Communist Party, is the clarifying one for our generation. We'll never leave the fight until we win.
Well, Dr. Kevin Roberts, it's been a wonderful conversation with you, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Really appreciate it and love the work that you do, so thanks for having me.
Thank you.
You bet.
This is China Insider with David Zhang. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to check out our channel on YouTube, as well as watch all of our full episodes on Epoch TV. You can also follow me on Twitter at David Zhang EET.